Good morning and welcome to the second day of our November term of court held here at Dakota West in Mitchell. If you have not already had an opportunity to do so, we have several publications available for you in the lobby, and these are at no cost. The first one, Gray Book, has a brief synopsis of the oral argument cases we will be considering this term. Also tells you a little bit about the justices that make up the South Dakota Supreme Court. The second publication with our picture on the cover is entitled A Photographic History of the South Dakota Supreme Court from Territorial Days to the Present. And the third publication, a blue cover with a gold seal on it, is a written narrative of how the South Dakota Supreme Court functions. Please feel free to help yourselves during a break if you've not already had these, picked up these publications. This morning, the court would like to welcome students from Howard High School, Armour High School, Mitchell Christian High School, Menno High School, Platt High School, Stickney High School, Flandreau High School, McCrossin's Boys Ranch, Wolseley High School, Tri-Valley High School, Castlewood High School, and Woonsocket High School. If any of you have brought in cell phones, please double check that they are shut off so that they do not go off during the argument. The first case for oral argument today will be in the matter of the application of Catherine Benton. For the appellant, Catherine Benton, is Mr. Mark High, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellee, Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners, is Mr. Neil Fulton, an attorney from Pierre. Mr. High, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel, ladies and gentlemen. This is an appeal of the decision of the Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners denying Catherine Benton its application for an EMT advanced paramedic license. We believe that this appeal presents a very straightforward issue to the court, and that issue is this. In considering an application for paramedic licensure, may the board legally deny an application based solely upon the fact that the applicant has a felony? Or, under the law, is the board required to exercise its judgment and consider the moral character of the applicant as a whole in making that determination? We believe that the law requires that the board examine the character of the applicant as a whole and does not allow them to adopt a rule that requires automatic denial of applicants with felony convictions. And if I could, I'd just like to give the court a little bit of background on the case.
That would be good.
In 1994, Catherine Benton lived in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. During a two-week period, over a decade ago now, Catherine Benton made what she admits was a very dumb mistake. She became involved with a friend in a scheme involving forged checks. Ms. Benton became involved in this check writing scheme where approximately five checks were forged and passed. Some additional checks were also signed by Ms. Benton during this scheme, but to the best of her knowledge and the best of our knowledge, they were never passed. In addition, as a part of the scheme, Ms. Benton obtained a driver's license falsely and gave it to a lady named Lou Ann Grandstaff, who was the friend that she was involved in. Ms. Benton's friend was arrested. Ms. Benton turned herself into police. She pled guilty to one count of false application for a driver's license, two counts of obtaining property under false pretenses, and three counts of forgery. The court may have noticed in the briefs there is a little bit of confusion. Different records from Oklahoma have different descriptions of exactly what she was convicted of, but with regard to the three counts of forgery and two counts of obtaining property under false pretenses, sometimes the records call them five counts of forgery. They arose from the same conduct, but I think what we officially got was it was two counts of obtaining property under false pretenses, three counts of forgery. But I wanted the court to be aware there was some confusion as to exactly what these were termed.
So
but
she either has six or seven felonies.
Six, Your Honor.
Six.
And are all those, would they be felonies under the laws of the state of South Dakota as well?
I believe so, Your Honor. I couldn't cite you the rule, but I think they were clearly felonies, and she admits that, and she accepted her punishment. Ms. Benton was sentenced to 7 years probation in Oklahoma. She was ordered to pay restitution. She paid the full amount of the restitution. In early 1999, in fact, she was placed on unsupervised probation due to her good conduct. In 1995, Ms. Benton moved from Oklahoma to Kimball, South Dakota. And since her felony conviction 10 years ago, she's lived an exemplary life, and I think that is undisputed in this case. She spearheaded a campaign in Kimball to purchase 300 bike helmets for the children of Kimball. She works with the chief of police during homecoming and street painting, supervising kids. She served on the Kimball Library Board and was elected its president. She's presided over Kimball in Progress, which is a local service organization. She chairs the Brule Buffalo County Emergency Planning Committee. She teaches EMT courses at Sioux Valley Hospital in Sinte-Gillespie. She's the coordinator of the Brule County Ambulance Service, and in that position, she has check writing authority for the ambulance service. She does the billing and she manages their finances. One of the most ironic things I found about the case is before the district court hearing, before Judge McMurtry, I asked Ms. Benton where I could meet her before the hearing to talk about the case before I argued it, and she told me meet her at her office at the courthouse. She's the Brule County Emergency Director, has an office in the courthouse. It shows that Brule County has enough trust in her to allow her to put together the county emergency management plan. Perhaps most importantly, though, she works as an EMT intermediate in Rosebud, South Dakota. Every Wednesday, there's jobs around Kimball where she could work, but she works in Rosebud. Every Wednesday, she drives 140 miles to Rosebud. She stays over until Saturday, working her shift in Rosebud. She sleeps on a cot in the ambulance shed in Rosebud so she can work as an EMT intermediate in Rosebud, where they desperately need these people. Ms. Benton wants to be a paramedic because paramedic can provide additional emergency services, provide certain cardiac services, most importantly, that intermediates cannot provide. They don't have that in Rosebud, and that's what she wants to be able to do. She received her basic license, EMT basic, in 1998. She got her intermediate license then in 2000, and in 2003, she applied to the board for her paramedic license. The board denied her application initially because of the felony, and we asked for a hearing, which was held on June 3rd, 2003. There were numerous people that showed up to testify and submitted affidavits on her behalf, discussing her good character and her skills as an EMT. The board asked no questions concerning Mrs. Benton's character at the hearing, other than questions directly related to the felony conviction in 94. The only evidence that's ever been presented in this case regarding anything negative about Ms. Benton's moral character is evidence of her 1994 felony convictions. After the hearing, then, the board asked Ms. Benton if she would provide a more detailed summary of exactly what happened as part of these felony convictions. She submitted an affidavit to the board, which is in the record, detailing to the best of her recollection what had occurred. And then to make certain that we've provided the board with everything they needed, I contacted the Oklahoma court system. I found out the name of the prosecutor's office where this had gone through, and I put them in direct contact with the prosecutor's office so they could get whatever information they wanted about these felonies to check them out. We even agreed to give the board an extension under the law. I think they had 30 days to make a decision. We said, have an extension, get whatever information you want in order to about these felonies. On September 9th, 2003, then the board issued its decision, its proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, I should say. The initial proposed findings denied Ms. Benton's application based solely upon the fact that she had a felony conviction in 1994. The proposed findings did not in any way reference her model lifestyle since 1994, and the findings concluded that the sole basis for denial of her application was the felony conviction. And that's on page 147 of the record. 2 days later, after we received the proposed findings on September 11th, we objected to the board's findings, and in our objections, we told the board we did not believe that they could deny her a license based solely upon the felony conviction, that they had to consider her life as a whole and could not just have a rule that says if you have a felony, you can't get a license. After we made that objection to the board, they then issued an amended proposed findings and included in the addition to the denial based upon the felony that they were denying her application because she had not disclosed her convictions for obtaining property through false pretenses and use of a false or fictitious name to obtain a driver's license. We believe the board's decision should be reversed for two reasons. First of all, we believe the board failed to use its discretion in properly considering all of the evidence presented to it and instead relied solely upon the felony conviction for denying the application for paramedic licensure. We also believe the board's finding that Ms. Benton did not disclose her convictions for obtaining property under false pretenses and obtaining a driver's license through the use of a false or fictitious name is clearly erroneous and not supported by the evidence in this case.
Was there any indication they considered the other evidence that you presented about her life and what she'd done since these felonies?
There was nothing, Your Honor, in the findings and proposed findings and conclusions to law, there was nothing in there that made mention of the fact that they considered that or that they weighed that, and that's exactly what we're asking the court to find in this case. We think they can consider the felony. Certainly, that's part of her life, and that's something they should consider. That's something the law demands that they consider. But what we're asking is that they go further and not deny it simply based upon the felony. They look at the past 10 years of her life, which have been exemplary. And there's no indication.
How old was she in 94 when she had those felonies?
I would have to guess.
Okay, it wasn't in the record, but it.
No.
Okay.
30s.
How much of the board hearing was devoted to considering the evidence from these witnesses in her favor, and how much was spent on the felony convictions?
Judge, as I recall, the hearing lasted a couple of hours. It was made pretty clear to me that she wasn't getting a license because she had a felony, and basically what the hearing was almost totally devoted towards talking about the things that she'd done in the last 10 years and her character since then. I mean, we admitted she had this felony, and we wanted to show the board what a good job she'd done in turning her life around since then. So 95% or more. At the end, there was a couple questions about the felony from one of the board members, but almost entirely the hearing was based upon us trying to convince them that she had led a good lifestyle.
What specific relief are you seeking from this court?
Well, Your Honor, we'd ask that the court reverse the board's decision and find that Ms. Benton is of good moral character based upon the evidence of the record and direct the board to grant her a paramedic license.
So you want a direct order from this court ordering the license to issue? You don't want another hearing?
Well, my first choice would be the direct order, because I think the record is clear that weighing the evidence of her life since then against the felony, that she is of good moral character, she is a good person. I would say that, Judge, I think this is a very important issue for the court and important for people who want to turn their lives around and want to get into fields like the medical field and the paramedic field where they can help people. And so if the court's not willing to go that far and they think that the board should be the one who ultimately makes that decision, we would, in the alternative, ask that the court help us define this issue and send it back to the board with instructions that they do need to look at the entire life and weigh that against the felony and not have an arbitrary rule that if you have a felony, you don't get a license.
Have we ever done that? Have we ever issued a license from an inferior board on the basis that someone is of good moral character?
Your Honor, I do not think so. And as you can see from Mr. Fulton in my briefs, there's kind of a dearth of law on this particular issue. But I did not see a case where the court ever said issue the license.
And one other question. She wants to be a paramedic on the Rosebud Reservation. Is there any licensing authority on the reservation for paramedics on the reservation?
Not to my knowledge. I think she has to follow the state licensure. And it's a bit more complicated than that, and I don't profess to be an expert, Your Honor, but it's my understanding that there's a national organization that actually kind of oversees training and licensure of paramedics, and that each individual state then makes a determination. And it's if one state says you can't get it, it's difficult to go to, for instance, to Nebraska and get a license, even though they may have in the first place given her a license, because South Dakota denied it. It makes it virtually impossible for her to go to another state and get the licensure. And that's another reason why this is so important, that we define this rule for the board, because sometime down the line, other people are going to want to come and have this weighed and the rule against a felony
just makes it difficult for someone to turn their lives around into good.
Have you considered what impact this would have on other areas of licensing or other boards that review whether somebody else is entitled to a license? For instance, the bar. If we were to send it back to this board, and say you've got to consider more, is there something unique about this particular licensing procedure that would be different than other boards, or what kind of an impact would this have across the
Judge, I think there's similarities and there are differences. If we compare it to the bar, certainly good moral character would be a similarity that both of them would have. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know if it would be controlling on the, for instance, the Board of Bar Examiners. But I don't think it's a bad thing for the court to look at the law, and I think I'll get into it in a minute, but I think the statutory scheme clearly says that you got to look at everything. You got to look at the moral character, not just the felony. And I don't think it's a bad thing to use this case to set a rule to say, here's how you do it, board, you need to look at everything. If they go back and they say, look, we looked at everything and we don't think what she's done in the last 10 years outweighs the felony, you know, at least we'll feel like we got our shot. We might be back here, but at least we'll feel like we got our shot.
Are you sure they haven't done that?
I was expecting that question, Your Honor, and I wasn't in the boardroom, so I can't offer testimony as to did they do anything to consider that.
I mean, if they sat there and listened to a couple hours of testimony about her good moral conduct in the last 10 years or whatever, I mean, it's almost impossible to say that they have not considered that. And the burden of proof is on your client to establish good moral character, right?
It is, Your Honor, and here's what I think is the evidence of that. First of all, it's been made apparent to me throughout this case that she wasn't getting a license because she had a felony. But beyond that, if you look at the hearing transcript, you can tell that the board asked very few questions. They were totally, in terms of asking questions and finding out about her character, they were totally uninterested in it. There's almost none, if no, questions from the board as to what she's done or what her life's been like, which shows me they weren't interested. Secondly,
what if they accepted the fact of the evidence that you put on and just didn't feel it was enough? I mean, do they have to ask questions about it?
Well, I think what they should do, Your Honor, is somehow convey to us that she was given a fair shot and put that in that we've considered in the findings of fact, the fact that she has done all these good things, but we think the felony outweighs that. And what I'd point the court to is after the hearing, when the board submitted their initial proposed findings, they denied it based solely upon the fact that she had a felony. It wasn't until we said, hey, wait a second, we don't think you can do that. And at that point, we all knew we were going to show up at the Supreme Court at some time. But we don't think you can do that. And it wasn't until we told them that 2 days later we get another order that says, oh, here's another reason.
Let me ask you something on that line. You know, neither counsel have cited a case from this court which appears to me to be dispositive. It's a 1988 case called Katz versus Board of Medical Examiners. And in that case, this court said that the legislature may define what constitutes unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, which may absolutely disqualify the person from the practice of medicine. And then it goes on to say that the same argument essentially was raised in this case that you're raising here, and it says the legislature has the power to make a universal rule. We cannot look behind such a rule. And then it says, although in a certain sense such a rule is arbitrary in determining what shall be evidence of good moral conduct, the legislature can make such a test as the conviction of a crime conclusive. Now, it seems to me that's crystal clear that legally, even if you're right that she has good moral character today, that legally the board can do what they did.
If I could, let me address Katz specifically and then the statute more generally. But Katz involved, as you're aware, Katz involved a physician who was involved in some bad acts directly related to his practice. And maybe the court will think I'm splitting hairs here, but his issue was a bit different in that In Katz, they claim that you look only to the moment of the licensure and not consider everything as a whole, but what's the person's character at the time they apply? And Katz also involves some additional factors in terms of he wasn't able to get a licensure, I think, from the state of Florida, and he was having some other problems in addition to this. But if I could address that the statutory scheme,
you have 2 minutes, Counsel.
Which I think would certainly overrule Katz, even with the difference I think in Katz, is it's 36B413 talks about what are the requirements to obtain a paramedic license, and they clearly list the requirements, one of which is they must meet the moral character requirements of 36 4B6, which is the issue here. 36 4B6 then is kind of circular, but says in order to get a license you must be a quote good moral character. And I think that's significant because it says the board must determine whether the applicant is of good moral character. It lists several requirements, and none of the requirements listed by the board in that statute is if the person was convicted of a felony, they're ineligible. The legislature clearly could have said under the section where it says this is what the board should look at, that if you got a felony, you're not eligible. They don't say that. Instead, they say specifically, look to whether the applicant's of good moral character, which is our argument in this case. You've got to look at a whole.
But Katz construed the same exact statute, 36-430.
I agree that it was the doctor statute, but it's nearly identical to this one. And I guess the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, though, is that the legislature could have said that. They could have made that rule. Instead, what they said is, here's 24 factors you can look at, and you may deny it as based upon one of these factors. And these factors are, for instance, and I'm trying to explain to you why I think Katz is inapplicable, but the factors, the 24 factors include such things as intemperance, neglecting to report a sanitary condition, failing to fulfill student loan obligations. If we adopt the board's reasoning and take it to its literal extreme, if someone misses a student loan payment under this statute, the board can simply deny the licensure without considering any other part.
Your time has expired, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Fulton, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. This case is controlled in its outcome, even more than most cases, by the applicable standard of review. By that I mean this. The question presented here is, did the Board of Medical and Osteopathic Examiners abuse its discretion in denying Catherine Benton's license application? The question is not, as this court has pointed out in numerous administrative appeals, whether you would have reached the same decision as the medical board, whether I would have, whether Mr. Haig would have. The question is, on the facts presented to the board, could the board reach the decision it did on the applicable law? And that's where we tie exactly into Justice Sinner's question about Katz. And the answer is clearly yes, because the legislature has clearly said that you may deny a license application on the basis of a felony conviction. I think the best way I can
all
put
other
this,
facts being excluded, that is a sole factor.
That can be the sole factor. If we assume everything else, if we assume that we have a person of otherwise perfect moral character, the legislature has said in 36-4B-31 that the board may deny for unprofessional or dishonorable conduct. The legislature has then defined unprofessional or dishonorable conduct at 36-4-30 to include, among other things, a felony conviction. Mr. Haig puts it very well at page 19 of the brief when he says the controlling statute, 36-4B-31, provides that the board may deny an application if it finds proof of conduct included in 36-4-30. There's no dispute that Catherine Benton was convicted of multiple felonies. And to pick up on your question, Justice Meyer, I don't think there's any question that these would be felonies under South Dakota law also. I mean, they're a forgery, they're obtaining property through false pretenses, which is essentially in South Dakota law theft by deception, and they are applying for a driver's license under someone else's name. They are multiple counts of conduct that is not only criminal but demonstrates dishonesty. And that ties into what I think the confusion here is on exactly what the board considers and when it considers it. There's essentially two things that the board has to do, two times when it's asked to exercise its discretion. The first is the good moral character statute that Mr. Haig points to, and that's 36-4B-13. Catherine Benton first has to put on evidence to demonstrate certain things to even be eligible for license. She has to show that she's graduated from high school, that she's a resident, some other things like that, and she's got to satisfy her burden to demonstrate that she's of good moral character. That's the first place that the board can exercise its discretion. It can say, you haven't shown us that. Let's assume that the board had found she was of good moral character in this case. They didn't. If you look at the findings of fact, it's very clear that they say that the circumstances of her felony convictions demonstrate the absence of good moral character.
I assume then that your position is that the board does have discretion to admit somebody with a felony conviction then into the profession? It's their call. It's not an absolute bar.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The statute says that they may deny, so that obviously means that they may also grant. If I show up as the EMT and I've got a felony conviction and I can demonstrate that I meet these other things, the board can exercise its discretion. And they can say...
How do we know what other things, though, that they can consider? You know, sometimes when we review abuse of discretion, we actually look at factors and see whether the boards or the trial court or whatever it is that we're reviewing has looked at certain factors. In fact, there's even some language in some of our cases that it's important that a lower court or a body, a board or a commission or so forth, look at certain factors. In this case, how do we even know they looked at anything else? Or are we... do they need to look at other factors?
To take the questions backwards, Justice Meyer-Henry, I think, one, no, they don't need to look at any other factors because the legislature has specifically directed that they may deny. So I don't think they have to look at other factors. Going to the first question you asked, though, which is, what else should they look at? What else can they look at? What else did they look at? Well, you've got one, the list of unprofessional conduct at 36-430. They can look at all of those things clearly and make a decision up or down based on those. And then you can go back to 36-4B-13, which is the good moral character. And then, you know, the way the statutory scheme is set up, I think they can look at almost anything because there's no specific direction as to what that is.
But doesn't that open it up for abuse of discretion?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there is the availability of review by the circuit court and by this court. I think they have to determine what good moral character is. The only statute...
But you're saying our review is limited, that if they decide, all right, this person, there's an example of them being intemperate, we're therefore not going to grant it. You're saying we really don't have any ability to say that's an abuse of discretion, since they used one of the factors. Is that... Maybe I'm not understanding what you're saying, but...
I think that if you are in one of the 36-4-30 factors, the board can deny the license.
On any one factor?
On any one factor. I think that this court can then review and determine whether that conclusion was an abuse of discretion. I think what I would say is that the 36-4-30 statutes are specific things where the legislature has found that these are legitimate basis to deny a license. And I think that if you are within one of those, that's a legitimate exercise of the discretion delegated to the board by the legislature.
Well, when would you ever find abuse of discretion under your theory?
I guess that, Your Honor, we'd have to look at a particular case. I mean, abuse of discretion is one of those standards of review that's hard to apply in the abstract.
So, but any time anybody had a felony and they made the decision based on the felony, it would not be abuse of discretion. Are there any cases where it might be?
I think when we're talking specifically in the context of a felony, Your Honor, because of the legislative enactment, it would not be abuse of discretion because the legislature has specifically granted that discretion.
Even if the felony is 40 years old?
40 years old?
Yeah.
I think that's something that would be considered, Your Honor, but again, I don't think it's an abuse of discretion. And in particular here, I mean, that's an interesting question in the abstract, and it's a hard question in the abstract, but when you focus down with the lens on Catherine Benton, this is not exactly the case that it's portrayed from her side of the story. You look back at what happened at this administrative hearing. There was 2 hours of testimony. And you had primarily people coming in who worked with Ms. Benton at the EMT facility in Rosebud, who worked with her in Kimball. And those folks talked about the things she's done since her felony conviction, trying to satisfy her burden to demonstrate good moral character. But what was very interesting is they talked in terms of a conviction. And when they were asked if Catherine Benton had ever disclosed to them that she had 5 felony convictions, which is the number that I was aware of at that point when I was acting as the presenting officer to the board, they said no. So there was at least some testimony at the board hearing from people who were saying she's so forthcoming, she's so good, she's so honest, saying, wait a minute, actually she didn't tell us that. So that's step one. Then, after the hearing, or at the end of the hearing, one of the board members, I believe it was Dr. Thompson, asked her some specific questions about what was your conviction for? And she said forgery. Did you derive, and this is in the record, did you derive any personal benefit? No, was the specific answer. No, I didn't. We then went down to Oklahoma and dealt with the folks down there and found out that actually we're talking about 6 convictions. 3 for forgery, 2 for obtaining property by false pretenses, 1 for applying for a license fraudulently in someone else's name. And it arose in the context of Ms. Benton being approached by Ms. Grandstaff to say, if you sign these checks for me, I can report them as stolen, and I can pass them, and I won't have to pay for them, and we'll get the money. It was a specific conspiracy to steal money by deception. And as part of that, Catherine Benton initially signed 5 checks. She then, over this 2-week period, went out and applied for a license so Ms. Grandstaff could pass the checks with a phony ID. She then got a second account and wrote more checks, totaling up to 12. And there was some statements by folks in Oklahoma that Ms. Benton actually passed some of the checks. She denied that, but there was evidence before the board through this additional process where Mr. Haig put them in contact with Oklahoma, where they found people who said that she was actually passing some of the checks.
Was the board's decision unanimous?
The board's decision was unanimous, Your Honor.
Thank you.
It was unanimous.
Now, as far as these felonies are almost 10 years old.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there, you know, there is authority under at least the rules of evidence and so forth that 10-year-old felonies sometimes don't carry as much weight as far as person's credibility, at least. Is there something about, I mean, as Chief Justice asked you, a 40-year-old felony, maybe it had been the same instance, and she's now turned her life around for 20 years or 30 years. Wouldn't there be some point where we would have to send this back to look at other parts of her life?
I don't think with a felony conviction, Your Honor, based on the statutory scheme where the legislature has delegated this specific factor is something you can look at. As to the rules of evidence, I think convictions, whether they be felony or misdemeanor, that indicate dishonesty, such as forgery or things like that, are always admissible to go to credibility. So I think, you know, this isn't something that you'd get away from. And also, there are certain areas of life where we say a felony conviction is incredibly powerful and it forecloses certain opportunities. If you have a felony conviction, unless your civil rights are restored in South Dakota, we all know you don't get to vote, you can't run for office. Under the federal law, basically, you can never own a handgun again. Certain things are foreclosed to you if you have a felony conviction. Admission to the bar would be something where it's particularly relevant. I think being an EMT where you're dealing with people's health, where you have interaction with physicians, where you have interaction with prescription drugs, there is a legitimate reason to look and say a felony is something that we're not just going to look beyond.
Does it trouble you, and this goes back to Justice Meyer Henry's question to Mr. Haig, that a person could become a member of the bar who had a felony conviction in this state, but an EMT could not?
I think that's possible, Your Honor, but one of the
most... I asked you if it troubled you.
I'm sorry, your mic isn't as good, Your Honor. It does trouble me, and it troubles me in particular because if you apply basically the standard that Mr. Haig is asking you to apply, it's not just that the person could become admitted, it's that the bar couldn't exercise its discretion to say you won't be admitted. Because Mr. Haig's argument is essentially this. We've got this felony, but we're so good. Catherine Benton is so good, you have to let her in. She's just so good. You can't conclude that she didn't demonstrate good moral character. And I think that's why it's important to distinguish the two things first. Did she demonstrate good moral character? Does she have a felony that would allow the board to deny her the license anyway?
Did she, does the record reflect whether she ever attempted to get a pardon in Oklahoma?
The record does not reflect, at the time it was presented to the board, whether she sought to get a pardon.
Obviously, if she had a pardon from the governor of Oklahoma, then the board would not be able to consider those felonies.
You know, Justice Kohnkamp, I'm not sure if that's right or not. I mean, I haven't looked at that issue particularly to see, you know, if you would be able to consider those or not. I think you'd be looking then at what the state of South Dakota says about felony convictions after a pardon, what the state of Oklahoma says about a felony conviction after a pardon. As we, even with a pardon or a suspended impeer, there are certain things that you still get to go back and look at the conviction for. So I'm not sure what the answer would be there. But on the record presented to the board, these were convictions that had not been pardoned or otherwise expunged.
Mr. Fulton, maybe I may have misread your brief, but it seems to me you didn't cite Katz either.
I did not.
Is there a reason why?
Probably I missed it, Your Honor, and I think the statutory scheme is sufficiently clear. It really, you know, looking at this court's precedence on what you do with the plain language of a statute, I think you don't have to go beyond 36-4B-31 and 36-4-30.
Do you concede that that's what the board did?
What's that, Justice Sabres?
Do you concede that the board looked at no other factors, they just looked at the fact of the felony convictions and that was enough for them and bingo, they denied the application?
No, I wouldn't concede that, because I think if you look at the conclusions of law, they specifically say, I think it's in conclusion three, that the evidence surrounding the felony convictions demonstrates, one, that she's ineligible, and two, an absence of good moral character. So I think the primary evidence was relating to the felony, but I think they assessed both things, whether, one, there was a felony, and two, whether she demonstrated good moral character.
One other question in relation to this. Did any of the employers, especially the people who came in and testified on her behalf that she had good moral character, were any of them aware of her prior conduct or convictions in Oklahoma?
Several of the witnesses, Justice Sabres, were aware that she had a conviction. And that gets back to the point I made that some of them on cross-examination, when they were asked, were you aware that she had multiple convictions, said, oh, no, I wasn't. She didn't tell us that. But they were aware, at least some of them testified to being aware that she had a conviction. Looking back, I mean, I think one other thing to look at is, again, there was a lot of evidence that was presented in this secondary fact-finding procedure through Ms. Benton's affidavits and through the affidavits that were obtained from Oklahoma that contradicted what she said at the board hearing. Consistently at the board hearing, she said, what was your conviction? My conviction was for forgery. And when it was looked at in Oklahoma, there were these multiple convictions, and the pattern of them was very different than it was portrayed to the board. And I think that was also something that was important to the board. If there are no other questions, we would just ask the board there to find that there's no abuse of discretion, there were no clearly erroneous factual findings, and we'd ask the board to affirm the Board of Medical Examiners and the Circuit Court in all respects.
Thank you, Mr. Fulton.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hay, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Mr. Hague, before you start, I have one question that I want to make sure we get it out of the way. You know, we received the clerk informed us that a fax came in after this case was briefed and that the student status application is no longer at issue. Could you be specific and tell us what should we do or not do with respect to that?
Correct, Your Honor. In fact, I'm glad you asked that question. Two things have come up since the record has been established in this case. First, as you mentioned, Catherine was unable to get student status here in South Dakota, and she was granted student status in Nebraska. She went to Nebraska, and they allowed her to complete her paramedic training. So she has completed the training. She is eligible, but for this one issue, to get a license to be a paramedic, she's trained and can do it, and that's why it's so important to us. Secondly, since the hearing, she's also obtained a pardon from the governor of Oklahoma, and you know, certainly we would. Depending on the ruling of this court, certainly she's going to apply again now that she has the pardon. But it certainly would be helpful, and that's why we're still here, is because we want a ruling from the court as to what the state of the law here is in South Dakota and whether it can be denied based solely on the felony or whether you got to look at everything. Because I think not only to Catherine but to other applicants, that rule will come up again and again.
But more specifically, Are you asking us for a ruling on the issues that relate to the student status?
No, Your Honor. That's done. She's got that.
Okay.
Would it be appropriate for us to remand this case before we make a ruling to determine what effect the pardon would have on the board's decision?
Obviously, Your Honor, my first choice would be for the court to look at her exemplary life since the pardon and say there's no question but she's of good moral character and she's entitled to a license. I can see some of the members might be uncomfortable with that because it's the medical field and such, and so I hate to give up my argument that she should get one because I really believe she should, but we would also be comfortable actually with a ruling from the court as to what the state of the law is, and I think that'll help the board and the applicants so people just know from now on. And if I could, Justice Zinner, I looked at Katz as quickly as I could during the Mr. Fulton's argument, and in Katz, we actually argued this to Judge McMurtry, and I'm unsure as to why we didn't argue it before this court, but in Katz, the board denied the application based upon a number of reasons, one of which was the felony. He had lost his license to practice law in Florida because he was performing improper evaluations. He had an unlicensed employee performing evaluations. He had felony counts as well. He had committed Medicare fraud. He had some problems with examination grades from Alabama and Florida and no longer held licenses in those states. And he hadn't furnished the proper application materials. And so I would argue that yes, the court did address and say that one of the reasons that he could be denied was the felony, but there were also a host of other reasons. And in Katz, it appears as though, at least in that case, the court specifically addressed findings in that case to the qualifications and moral character of Katz. And I don't know exactly what the findings were in there, and I don't want to step over the bounds as to what they did, but I think that is a distinction. Secondly, I think the distinction is the felony in Katz related directly to the medical profession, where here it does not. And third, I would say that I think the statutory, if we need to go that far, I think the statutory scheme demands that any confusion over Katz be cleared up, and that we look at the statute where it specifically says the board must determine whether the applicant's of good moral character. And I don't think we can go as far as Mr. Fulton wants to go and say if any of these 24 items listed in the statute is violated, the board can deny the license based solely upon that. And I think that's what he's saying is if we can find one of these 24, if we can find that someone didn't make a student loan payment, if we can find intemperance, if we can find that someone didn't report a sanitary condition, which are all listed in there along with felony, the board has the power to deny it based solely on that. And I think that gives the board a power that the legislature never intended them to have. The legislature says, look at the moral character. Here's a list of reasons you should consider along with it. And you can deny it based on those reasons, but you got to look at the whole picture.
But even if we concede that Mr. Fulton is wrong on that point, that you're right on that point, we still have the question of whether or not, in these circumstances, the board abused its discretion in denying the permit, don't we? Now, how do you get around that?
I think, Your Honor, at least it's my opinion, that there's a lot of evidence in the record that shows that the board didn't consider these things. And I went through those before, and I just think they weren't interested. And maybe I should have gotten a better record, but because it's obvious to me that from the beginning we were headed here, from the first day, because we were told we weren't getting a license because we had a felony. The truth of the matter is we don't know what they looked at because I wasn't sitting in there. I think the record does indicate they didn't look at it and they denied it based solely on the felony. But I think this is a good opportunity for the court to tell us what the rule is and to send it back and let the board say, okay, here's the rule. You got to look at the whole thing, give her a fair shot. And that's all we're asking for in this case, is that we have a firm rule and we not be denied just because of the felony. Two other things I just wanted to address. Mr. Fulton argued that Ms. Benton was not forthcoming, and we've addressed that in the brief, and we totally disagree. We think the record's clear. She was very forthcoming, and I can't tell you enough how we went. Mr. Meilenberg, who represented the board as well, called me several times and said, can you get this for me? And we went to the extremes to get them the entire record. And to suggest that we tried to hide it or lie about it while we're contacting the courts to get them the whole record is just erroneous. For instance, if you look at page 58 and 59 of the transcript, they say when she was asked directly if she benefited, and she said no. And if you read page 58 and 59, she did not say no. What she was asked was, at the very end of the hearing, she was asked a compound question by one of the board members where he asked, tell us about what happened to the other person, how you benefited, you know, what was going on, and she gave a very brief answer. And she didn't address that part, and maybe she should have, but she certainly wasn't lying. And as quickly after as she could submit the affidavit, which is on page 46 of the record, as quickly after the hearing as she could, she laid out the whole story for them in a signed affidavit and told them everything they needed to know. In conclusion, Your Honors, I guess I'd say this. Catherine Benton made a mistake 10 years ago. She wishes she hadn't. I wish she hadn't. But she spent 10 years trying to make up for that. And people can turn their lives around. And as a society, we can't give up on people. There's not one bad mark on the record in the last 10 years anywhere in the record. She admitted her wrong. She paid the price. She's worked really hard. I mean, she's worked to an extent where I'm embarrassed when I look at her community service and compare it to what I've done. She's worked hard to regain the trust of her neighbors and her community. But the most ironic thing about this case, and the thing that makes me want to argue this case as hard as I can and get the right ruling for her, is this. She wants the license so she can go to Rosebud, South Dakota, where they don't have paramedics, where they need paramedics, because she wants to help people. I mean, she could go anywhere, but she wants this license so she can help people in Rosebud. And I think that alone is about as big a thing as you can say about her character when you try to understand what she's trying to do and what her life's like. And she's only asking for a fair chance. She's only asking that we follow the law and that we tell the board, look at everything, give us a fair shot, and don't base it on an arbitrary rule that if you have a felony, you can't get a license. And it's all we want is a fair chance to present our case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hay. Mr. Fulton did not use his full time on the rebuttal by Mr. Hay. Two matters were brought up in answer to a question that dealt with obtaining certification and also a pardon. Mr. Fulton cannot stand on his brief because these matters occurred after his brief was filed. Therefore, Mr. Fulton, I will allow you to use the remaining amount of your time, which is approximately 3 minutes, if you wish to address either the certification question that Mr. Hay visited about or the pardon.
Unless the court has specific questions, the only thing I would bring up on the pardon is we're reviewing the record as it was presented to the board. You know, that was not presented to the board, and I just remind the court that that's not an issue that's before the court. So unless there are specific questions on either of those two issues, I'd stand on the brief and on that based on the record presented, the board did not abuse its discretion or make clearly erroneous factual findings.
Questions from the court? If not, thank you, Mr. Fulton.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.